The Financial Times guides you through complex issues. In divisive times, don't settle for black and white. When you need the full perspective, turn to FT.com. Become a subscriber today. Search for FT subscription.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
Welcome to the podcast, episode 1068. It's Wednesday, the 16th of May, 2018. On the podcast today, I have, but before I tell you about that, visit voxmarkets.co.uk/businesslives. If you need another podcast to fill that commute or your day that's about business, then check that out, because it's a series of podcasts where we interview high-profile business guests. So it's quite inspirational. There's some interesting stories there. And one of the guests I talked to was Justin Urquhart-Stewart, and very interesting life he's had, you know? And he's put his life on the line. And his money on the line, his investments, his house, his mortgage to start his new business, which has turned out very well indeed, actually. But check that out, voxmarkets.co.uk/businesslives. Okay, on today's podcast, Julian Traeger, CEO of Anglo Pacific Group, APF ticker, and Julian discusses their Q1 trading update. I also have on John Mayer, mining analyst and partner at SP Angel, and John talks about the copper market. Also, he mentions other commodities that he thinks has a bright future. Plus, I have Alan Green, CEO of Brand Communications, talking about the following companies: Expediator, XPD, who I chatted to yesterday on the podcast. Stephen Blythe, their CEO, doing very well. Also, Catenay Innovation, CTEA, used to be, what was the name? Milestone Group, that's it. I changed the name there, and direction and strategy and board. And also, he mentions Legendary Investments, LEG. Plus, I have the top five most followed companies on Vox Markets in the last 24 hours, and the top five most liked RNSs, too.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Julian Traeger, Chief Executive Officer of Anglo Pacific Group. That's APF ticker. Julian, thanks for joining me again.
Pleasure. Good to speak to you.
Now, you've had a Q1 trading update out, and we'll get to the detail of that in a bit. Before we do, Julian, if someone's listening for the first time or they've not heard of your company, can you summarise what it's all about, please?
Yeah, so we're a global natural resources royalty company. We're the only one listed on the LSE, and we basically fund mines around the world and safe places in exchange for a share of their revenues.
Excellent stuff. So essentially, you loan money and they pay you back, plus out of the profit and revenue that they generate. Is that right?
Effectively, though it's not often a loan. It's just generally a contractual requirement for them to pay a percentage of their turnover.
I see. Okay. Well, last time I think we chatted was the final results, which were looking very good. So let's see if it's translated into Q1. Take us through some of the highlights, if you could, Julian.
Well, I think what was interesting in Q1 is, again, we had very strong cash flow generation. And so in the first quarter, our cash went up by another £10 million. So we've now ended the quarter with around £19 million of net cash plus completely undrawn borrowing facilities. Mm-hmm. Our actual income was down slightly because of long wall changeouts, principally in our two main royalties. But those shouldn't affect the outturn for the year, which remains unchanged. So we expect that volume decline in Q1 to be made up in the subsequent three quarters. And particularly encouraging was the doubling of the revenue from our vanadium royalty in Brazil. And we're optimistic about the prospects of further growth from that during the course of the remainder of the year.
I see. And as far as like you said, you seem quite bullish for the rest of the year. And is that the general take on the commodity market and where you're invested?
Well, I think not all the commodities are going to be synchronized in this cycle. Mm-hmm. So it really does depend commodity by commodity. But particularly for the coals and also for vanadium, which we are exposed to, the outlook for the remainder of the year is much more encouraging than just a few months ago.
Yeah, and so you say coals and vanadium. Are there any other commodities you're looking at that you're quite excited by? You think has a positive outlook?
Well, we're very interested in looking at copper and nickel. We want to increase our exposure to base commodities. So all those sorts of things should be areas where we look to make new investments.
Yeah, and is that basically down to, you know, the, as far as copper and nickel concerned, I mean, supply versus the electric sort of vehicle revolution that's about to happen?
Well, I think what's interesting about the mining cycle now is that there isn't much supply coming on anyway. The majors aren't investing in new projects, and there's not a lot of money for smaller miners to build new mines. So even before the additive demand from the electric vehicle story, we were looking at a supply-demand deficit for some of these commodities in the next couple of years. So I think, you know, there will be quite a big squeeze to come.
Yeah, absolutely. Very interesting. Okay, Julian, well, listen, if someone is listening to this now, likes the sound of what you're talking about in your Q1 update, but as yet are not following the story, could you give them three quick reasons why they should hit that follow button on your page and add you to their watch list, please?
Sure. Well, first of all, we are a de-risked way to play the rise in the commodity prices that we think are going to happen over the next decade. Secondly, we're already very cheap. We trade at a low multiple of earnings and a very low multiple of free cash flow. And then thirdly, you get a high dividend, around a 5% yield, which is 2 to 3 times covered. So all those three reasons mean that you should be looking at a good investment with Anglo Pacific.
Excellent stuff. Julian, good to chat to you, and hopefully we'll catch up in the not-too-distant future. Thanks very much.
Thanks, Justin.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is John Mayer, mining analyst and partner at SP Angel. You're right, John.
Yes, good form. Thank you.
Okay, well, it's been a bit news-light this week, hasn't it, on companies? I mean, the companies we generally chat about in the resource sector. So I thought, I've had quite a few people talk about copper at the moment, and it's been, we've hit a bottom, I suppose, haven't we, going back sort of last year, and fundamentals now are starting to look good because the old EV revolution is starting to take a bit of grip. I mean, we're way off it, you know, having any sort of major impact on traditional sort of diesel and petrol cars. I think the figure is, I don't know if you probably know this, but it's 30% at 30, they reckon, don't they? So they're aiming for 30% of cars and vehicles to be sort of electrified by 2030. So yet to be, but copper is a major component, isn't it?
Well, 2030 seems to be the big date that a lot of people are looking at from a forecasting perspective. We saw that Toyota said they were going to produce 11 different models of plug-in electric vehicles, and that they would be producing, I think it was a million vehicles a year by 2030, again, that magic figure. So, yes, when big companies say they're going to, that's what they're looking to do, we have to pay attention. The Chinese may well be ahead of the others, although, remember, Toyota is very progressive and very fast at moving their production lines. Of course, they have this huge advantage because they've been making the Prius for many years, and no doubt they have a whole range, series of other models ready to come out. And that's exciting. But I think the Chinese will move probably faster in many respects, because this is their opportunity to try and gain a major stake in the global auto markets going forwards. And of course, materials like copper are hugely important for this. In fact, not just copper, nickel, cobalt, lithium, some of the rare earths. These things will help to make better vehicles. We saw that Tesla said they were hoping to cut out cobalt from their batteries going forwards. But that's it's easy to say it. It's not easy to do it, because batteries, the high power density lithium batteries are unstable, and they need materials like cobalt in order to make them safe. So this is it's an interesting world that we live in, and I think the better quality vehicles are still going to maintain levels of neodymium, cobalt, and other funny metals.
Yeah, but I've looked around and I don't know if you know about this, but I suppose you're a mining analyst, you should, but I mean, they're saying that as yet there aren't any major copper mines coming online in the next, 5 years or something, which is going to affect the supply of copper. And of course, when you get the increasing amounts of copper in cars, this is going to have a problem. So demand is going up and supply is going down. I mean, is this an accurate forecast?
Well, yeah, it is pretty accurate. I mean, there is a new copper mine coming on production right now in the DRC. But remember, it's in the DRC. Mm. It's been known about for some years. It's the Katanga mine operated by Glencore. Yeah. And the DRC is a difficult and often a dangerous place. The next big copper project that's been discovered by anyone is at Cascabel in Ecuador by Solgold.
Yeah.
Which, of course, you could have bought for under a penny a few years ago on the London AIM
market.
Don't rub it in,
John.
did you have some?
No, you know I didn't. But yes, and if you'd been on the podcast then, I mean, when did you start the podcast? I think just after that started to rise, I think. And yes. Never mind.
Well, so the interesting thing about that project is, Solgold's project at Alpala in Cascabel in Ecuador is now ranked in the world's top 10 undeveloped copper projects. And that is spectacular that they, within a few years, they have drilled and drilled and drilled, and they have proven up a resource of huge scale, and which, frankly, nobody thought was going to make it. And there, lo and behold, it's in the world's top 10. So all credit to them. They have a gigantic project that looks like it could be developed as part of the next generation of giant copper mines. And the world will need this because the big mines in Chile, they have their issues. They're getting deeper, and their ore grades are falling, and they will be exhausted sooner or later.
Mm. So, I mean, the advice is really, it's like gold, isn't it? Get a good, decent copper play in your portfolio if you can. And in fact, you know, it wouldn't hurt to have a producer and explorer in there, would it, really?
Copper discoveries are few and far between. And so we value them in the mining industry. If you think back a few years ago, First Quantum Minerals was a tiny little company in Canada and then in London, and as it developed its first and then second and third copper mine, it grew exponentially. So now it's worth billions. Mm-hmm. Yes, it's had some up and downs on the way, but generally, if you held it, you did very well. So this is why we love copper projects so much, and companies like Solgold and Georgian Mining, because they generally do very, very well.
Well, I know Asia Met, you don't cover Asia Met, but I mean, I've had those from just below 1 pence, and now they are sort of 12 pence. And Tony Manini, the CEO of that, came on the podcast, and he's got an excellent track record. He's with Oxiana and all that stuff, and so he knows. He's built copper mines before in downturns, and when he came on the podcast, and when the copper was particularly unloved product a couple of years back, he was saying, I've been here before, this is the best time, if you can obviously get the funding and financing, to start developing copper mines. When the price is low, no money goes into investing in it. And what happens is, and that was really before, I mean, even then he was talking about electric vehicles, but that was before, you know, all the government started coming out and saying, we are banning the sale of petrol and diesel 2040, some 2035. And so he said, listen, I've been here before, you know, we'll see an upturn in the copper price, because just lack of investment goes in, and then you get lack of supply coming out the other end, and the demand pretty much for copper doesn't really, you know, fluctuate that massively. But and he's right, you know, he's been proven right. He said, look, at the moment, and now it's 10 times where it was when I spoke to him 2 years ago. And yet the copper price hasn't really gone completely mad, but it's bounced off the bottom. And so, but I think the price action is only going one way in the next 5-10 years, isn't it? Considering, you know, like you said, lack of supply coming on, you know, less than a handful, and yet you've got this, you know, the governments around the world banning, you know, fossil fuel sort of vehicles. So it's only going one way, isn't it?
Well, Tony is sitting on a good copper discovery there. It's in a slightly difficult country in Indonesia, but it's a good discovery, great intersections, and he is known to be a smart and reputable operator. So all credit to Asia Met Resources, I think very well done there. I think on the copper side, yes, just general demand for copper is good. The world continues to grow. Consumption in China and the US definitely rising. The rest of the world's not doing that badly either. So unless somebody upsets the whole global apple cart, and there's always potential for Mr. Trump to do that, then I think prices should continue to rise. what's holding back the copper price this week is, and maybe just a little bit in general, is the strength of the US dollar, mm-hmm. because, of course, it's a US dollar-based commodity. Also, we're seeing a situation in China where it's a bit tit-for-tat between Trump and the Chinese at the moment, but the Chinese are restricting scrap imports from America into China. That's for copper scrap, so it's having an impact, although that should be positive for the copper price going forwards, because it means they're going to have to run around the world trying to find copper from elsewhere to feed their smelters and their furnaces. So it's an interesting market, but the dynamics seems to be in favour of price appreciation.
Mm-hmm, yeah. So give me a top... I mean, I assume copper's in there, but say, give me a top three commodities, John, that you see, you know, potentially in over the next 5-10 years. What do you think they are?
Well, I think from, you know, given what's going on in technology, electric vehicles, the potential for electric aircraft going forwards, copper certainly, nickel, titanium. So you're looking at Blue Jay with their mineral sands project there, that kind of thing. Graphite going forwards. Difficult to know exactly who to recommend on that this week, but those are the key areas, I think.
Yeah, yeah, cool stuff. All right, marvelous stuff.
Oh, and John, don't forget lithium. There's always room for one more on lithium.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I do have I own some lithium. Do you know what? I've got exposure to all that. I got copper. I got lithium. I got graphite. I haven't got titanium or anything. But here we are. John, thanks for that, fella, and hopefully we'll catch up next week.
Will do. Thank you.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Alan Green, CEO of Brand Communications. You all right, Al?
Well, I'm battling a chest infection just, but the sun's shining. It's a beautiful day. What's not to like? It's beautiful down here on the South Coast.
Yeah, do you know what? And the good thing is with us men, we don't mention it too much, our problems, do we?
No, we don't.
At least, you know, definitely never mentioned. And I can tell you're battling it, Al, but as a soldier, carry on. There we go. All right, fella. Well, listen, let's move on to stocks. Let's not mention any colds, coughs, because we're
that's
what kind of people we are. But I hope your chest infection gets better.
Thanks, mate.
So
cheers.
What are you looking at, first of all, Al, stocks-wise?
Right, okay. So I've got a bit of an innovation theme this morning. One company we spoke about a couple of months ago, and there have been some very, very encouraging sort of developments with that company this week. But firstly, just wanted to mention Expediator that we spoke about, the company, the logistics and transport company that we spoke about that are operating into Eastern Europe. Fantastic set of results out yesterday.
I spoke to Stephen yesterday, the CEO on the podcast. Yeah. Very impressive results, actually. A decent, proper business generating revenue. And, carry on. I'll go through them.
Well, I think what's impressive about Expediator is that they've just done everything that they said they would do. You know, they raised the money last year and they acquired those three businesses. They've integrated them. They're already delivering economies of scale. And as can be seen with the results, the revenue increase, the EBITDA increase, the profits increase, it's a great set of results. So basically, Stephen Blythe and his team have got massive kudos in my book, because they said they'd do something and they've gone out and delivered it. No fuss, they've just delivered it on the nail. And I like it when a management team does that and just gets on with the job, and that's great. So it'll be interesting to see what the future brings. But certainly, if you were invested last year at sub 30p mark, you'd be delighted, because shares are now sort of trading 62.5, 63p. So looking good.
Yeah, absolutely. They're a decent business, and they got a dividend policy there, which is very good. And I just looked at the share price, and I last chatted them, it was about 30 pence or something like that. And literally now it's up to 62 pence, so it's a very good business built on that. But they do, and Stephen did sound very positive about the future, you know. So, so worth keeping an eye on. XPD is the ticker there. Okay, anything else, Al?
Yes, the first of our innovative companies today, first of two. So this is a company that was formerly known as Milestone Group. It's now changed its name to Catenae, C-A-T-E-N-A-E, Catenae Innovation. And the EPIC code is CT, that's C-T-E-A.
C-T-E-A.
That's it, yeah. Now, what caught my eye here, the company has got a market cap of less than £1 million, it's £845,000 at the moment. shares have traded size 0.77p, as low as just under 0.01p, currently at 0.13 pence. The CEO is a guy called Tony Sanders, and what's caught my eye here is that they recently formed a joint venture with music supremo Martin Heath to the joint venture is called Trust in Media, and they are developing a system for payment processing, blockchain, virtual banking, KYC, that's know your customer products, and a whole raft of other stuff. So what's interesting here, what really caught my eye was that the JV is the company formed is with a guy that's got a great track record in music, a chap called Martin Heath. And if you Google Martin Heath, you'll see just what this guy's been up to. He founded Rhythm King Records many years ago, and Rhythm King Records were responsible for producing Left Field, Moby, Betty Boo, S Express, D-Ream, and a whole raft of acts. He then went on to form Renegade Games, and then ultimately formed a company called Seed Media. So Martin has got a fantastic track record. He's a real force of nature, both as a person and also in his business ventures. So I find this really exciting that he's now, as an innovator in music, he's now turned his attention to blockchain payment processing and everything else. And I think this joint venture puts Cat and I Innovation at a very exciting juncture. This was also picked up by Align Research, who issued a note yesterday on Cat and I Innovation, and again highlighted the potential of this joint venture with Martin Heath. The company, clearly they're working on developing the products at the moment, but Align have looked at the books that they've gone through, that they've gone through the joint venture, and they currently suggest that where we are now at 0.13p, we've got potential a potential upside of at least 110%, taking up to 0.28p. Clearly, it's early days. This is a company that's in innovation, but I think, as with any company at this level, it's all about the people involved. And it really excites me that Martin Heath has got involved with this company. So that's Cat and I Innovation, CTEA. Could be a really good opportunity to get him right at the start.
I did you say that I did Google Martin Heath, and it turns out he's a former professional squash player from Oban, Scotland.
Okay,
to be honest.
That's another Martin Heath, yeah.
No, but you know, the first result comes up. Yeah, Martin Heath's story interview on YouTube. Martin was an officer in the British Army before he co-founded Rhythm King Records. So I'm there. That's the first one. Second result is Martin Keith, the squash player. Don't get them confused. They're a different person. Cool. It's a tiny market cap, and they've had a bad time of it in their previous incarnation. So it'd be interesting to see, to sit and watch what they're doing next and what happens, what comes from this, you know?
Well, I think if you've got involved at any level in crowdfunding, then obviously, you know, a lot of the companies you might see on Crowdcube or Cedars or any others are early stage companies. You don't necessarily know much about them, but As Sentient Capital do, who we discussed on the program, it's a vetting process, and you're trying to find the companies that have a chance of succeeding. And to my mind, Cat and I Innovation, it's jumped through all those hoops. You've got the sort of people that are involved with Tony Sanders and bringing Martin Heath to the table on this one. That cuts through, that sorts the wheat from the chaff in my book. So you've got an early stage innovation company that's worth less than £1 million, and you'd be investing at the level that a lot of people go into crowdfunding companies at a similar valuation or in many cases more. So it's a listed company. There's a lot of upside to come, I think. Clearly not without risk, but take a look, get involved, but also do your research on Martin Heath and Rhythm King Records.
Lovely. What else are you looking at, Al?
Okay, we spoke about Legendary Investments, LEG, Leg, easy epic code to remember. We spoke about Legendary a few months back, and they have a number, again, Legendary Investments, it's headed by Zafar Karim, who's a former Rothschild banker, and Thomas Reuner, who's a former IDC, Gartner, and KPMG. So, again, a very solid board here. So Legendary have a number of investments in companies that in some cases are listed. They invested into Amadeo Resources, Busks Energeticus, which is Mexican biodiesel, and a host of other companies. But the jewels in the crown, if you like, the key holdings are with Virtual Stock Holdings, provides a payment benchmark to enable transactions to take place, and they have ventures with Bear Grylls, Tesco, NHS. Recently signed a partnership with Previse, there is talk about virtual stock listing on NASDAQ as the next step, and obviously would provide them with significant upside on that return. The second one is IBS, which is a banking service in New Zealand, which has
irritable bowel syndrome.
That's what it was. Yes, no.
Anyway,
no. IBS is a banking service to be provided in New Zealand, electronic banking in New Zealand. It's been approved by the New Zealand regulator. Legendary Investments owns nearly 12%, and it's the valuation of their stake in this company puts it at about just over $1.1 million. So that's a pretty impressive leg up by any standards. Excuse the pun. Recently, a couple of days ago, the company raised a further $550,000. To reinvest and further invest into the into both IBS and Virtual Stock, and develop the company further. Interesting to note that Zafir Karim also invested £100,000 of his own money. And again, you know, when any chairman or when any board member does that, you know, if you look at that in the set against the context of the overall raise, which is $550,000, that's a fairly chunky sum of money to come up with. Although I'm sure he can afford it, but the fact is that he's following his own money, which is very. Very, very significant to me. So Legendary currently have a market cap of just over 4 million, traded as high as 0.31p, as low as 0.1p. It's currently just off the year low at the moment. So again, after that raise, they're now funded, and we've had the approval from the New Zealand regulator for IBS. So again, a lot more upside to come. And what I said about the vetting process with Kat and I just now, it's Legendary have done that pre-vetting for you, so you know you're invested into solid growth companies.
Lovely. Anything else you're looking at, Al?
Yes.
You sure?
Yes, indeed. Yes, yeah. We have a company called U and I Group. Sorry, the old chest infection is weighing on me this morning. My apologies. A company called U Plus I Group used to be known as Development Securities PLC, and this U Plus I Group, the epicode is UAI, has a $6 billion portfolio of community-focused regeneration projects, and what it does, it goes into urban sites in London. It was working in London, Manchester, and Dublin, and it unlocks the potential within those areas. So brownfield sites are developed to provide services to the community and benefits to the communities, and also to deliver returns for shareholders. The company published a set of full year results at the end of last month, a few weeks ago. A record year of profits and progress. $68 million of development and trading gains versus $35 million the previous year. So it's over doubled its trading gains. And the net asset value of the company grew to 303p. Shares currently trading at 2.37p. Let me just double check that, but the company delivered a solid set of results for the year, which I think judged against the context of the previous performance is a highly significant pivotal point for the group. The chief exec said that the visibility for the company going forward is, has a pipeline of existing projects with a gross development value in excess of $7 billion. Shares have risen rapidly since then, if you're looking at the chart there, Jess.
What did you say the ticker was again, Al?
UAI.
UAI. Okay, UAI. UAI, yes.
Now, again, this was picked out by the VectorVest platform as a company with great potential. VectorVest, as you probably know, I've spoken in the past, has a series of metrics, including relative timing, growth earnings, earnings growth rate, and so on. The relative timing VectorVest logged at the time this was written and published last week showed a rating of 1.54 on a scale of 0 to 2, which is excellent. Growth earnings rate of 15%, which is very good. And the shares, as I say, currently trading around £2.30 or 230 pence, set against a net asset value of 303p and a VectorVest valuation currently of 286 pence. But this is, if you invest into this company, you're investing into brownfield regeneration, into communities. So it's a worthwhile investment by any standards. But the management team have produced a solid set of results this year and look set to continue with that $7 billion pipeline going forward.
Marvellous. Well done for soldiering through, Al, because, a chest infection is a dreadful thing. And you talk about innovation. Maybe we need some innovation in the world of, chest infections. What do you reckon?
No.
Don't laugh too hard, Al. You lose the lung.
No. Don't start me, because I'll start coughing and I won't stop.
Marvellous. Well, anyway, Al, thanks for that, fella, and I will speak soon, buddy.
Thanks, Jess. Okay, speak next week. Cheers, mate. Bye.
Okay, it's time for the top five most followed companies on Vox Markets in the last 24 hours. They are as follows. At 5, Vast Resources, VAST. At 4, Phalanx Group, FLX. At 3, Bizant Resources, BZT. Check it out. I wrote a blog on those. And there's a massive disconnect between the asset they have, which is potentially world-class, and its copper, which John Mayer likes a lot, a mining analyst. He's award-winning. So I think copper price is going to go one way. At 2, Vernalis, which is VER. Number 1, most followed company, Webis Holdings, WEB. I do think people are behind, the curve on this one, because it's done, it's gone, it's rallied crazily, 500%. And yet people are now following it, so there we are. Get in early, that's what you need to do. Okay, top 5 most liked RNSs, most popular, most liked. At 5, Upland Resources, OGA consent to P2235 license assignment. At 4, Phalanx Group, in capitals, contract wins and technology development. At 3, Hurricane Energy, operational update. At 2, Fast Forward Innovations, regulatory approval. And at 1, it's Asia Met Resources, initial mineral resource estimate for BKZ deposit. Like I said, do you know what? I did tweet out, they've got so much going on at the moment now. They've got BKM, which is their main, project there. And they've got BKZ, which is now just an initial mineral resource estimate on that for lead, zinc. And they haven't even touched Bouton, which is a massive, four or five times as big as BKM, which in itself is a compelling investment case. Okay, that's it for the podcast. Thanks for listening. Muchos appreciators!
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
Hear the intriguing stories behind some of the world's best love songs in the FT's Life of a Song podcast. From soul to funk, to punk to jazz. Discover how classic songs like Smells Like Teen Spirit, Yesterday, and Stairway to Heaven were born. Search online or listen at ft.com/podcasts. Plus, don't miss the new Life of a Song book, featuring a compilation of 50 songs that have appeared in FT weekend columns. Pick up your copy from Amazon, your local bookshop, or give a gift to someone who'd enjoy this brilliant literary mixtape.